Okay. So this week we are beginning to study chapter 6, Perek Vav of Sefer Shmuel Aleph. We should be able to finish the Perek. And for those of you who weren't with us last time, it really is it could be looked at as a standalone Perek, in the sense that, you know, I'll catch you up what you missed and you can jump right in. What happened was is that there was, in Perek Daled, there was a war against the Plishtim, a war that the Jews seem to have initiated. They lost that battle severely, and the Aron, the Holy Ark that they had brought to rally them in battle, was kidnapped by the enemy, by the Plishtim. And then in Perek Vav, which we handled last time, the Plishtim were in control of the Aron, and the Aron was wreaking havoc on the Plishtim. It was not only it affected their temple and their idol, the idol known as Dagon, but it was affecting the people. A plague, a magefa of severe hemorrhoids had affected the people. Again, why that was chosen is a little bit of an interesting question. And in the third location, the Aron had moved from three. It started out in the city of Ashdod, then which was a Plishti city. The Plishtim said, let's move it to the city of Gass, which was another one of their cities, and it affected the city of Gass. Finally, they moved it to Ekron, their third location, and it was there in Ekron that the plague kind of morphed into a higher level and that people started dying from the plague, and there was death amongst the Plishtim. So we're picking up Perek Vav with the Plishtim in control of the Aron, and already asking the questions of, you know, what do we do with it? Maybe we should be sending it away. So Perek Vav, Pasuk Aleph. Vayhi Aron Hashem b'stei Plishtim shiva chodeshim. In totality, it was that the Ark of God was in the field of the Plishtim for 7 months. Now, this pasuk may be viewed as a heading that the Aron, the entire time, from the time it was taken until the time it was given back, when it went through all these cities, the total time listed is 7 months. It may also refer to the fact that after it was in the actual city, so after it was in Ashdod and Ekron and Gath, different order, that they decided it's affecting the cities too much. And again, we mentioned this last time, they had an idol worshippers mentality, which we don't have. We don't believe in idols, we believe in Hashem Echad, and he's the same Hashem in America as he is in Australia, as he is in Antarctica. There's no place on earth that God doesn't have all power. But in an idol worshipper's mind, a god and a symbol of a god can have power in different locations. So it may be that after it was in the cities, they decided, let's put it into a field. Let's see, if it's in a field that's not next to one of the cities, maybe perhaps that will, quote-unquote, limit its effect on us, on the people.
They didn't destroy it because they respected it.
They didn't destroy it, they respected it, and at this point they're fearing it as well. Mm-hmm. And, you know, in that, you know, I imagine in the idol worshipper's mind, destroying an idol, you know, that's probably like a cardinal sin. The third approach is interesting because it deals with some of the Parsha Shavua that has been going on in the short, in terms of quantity but not quality, source sheet. There's a line from the Medrash in source number one, the Medrash in Parshas Vayera, when Avraham entered a peace treaty with Avimelech, who was the king of the Plishtim. And that in the psukim there, Avram did not consult with God before making a peace treaty. Now, does someone always have to consult with God before making a peace treaty? We could leave, you know, that's a question. We're not here to have parshanut on the Avram story. But what had happened was is that Hashem had come to Avram Avinu and had promised him the land, promised him that his children will be in control of the land, that at some point it's going to happen. And so at that juncture, it seems to be, and the way that the Medrash looks at the story, it seems to be slightly critical of Avram's decision to enter into a peace treaty without consultation of Hashem. And there are a number of lines of the Medrash there. This one line relates to this pasuk so nicely. Obviously, it's a harsh reality, but the Medrash says, it's almost like Hashem is talking to Avram and giving him rebuke. Ata nasata lo zayin kvasot. you gave him, you, Avram, gave Avimelech, the king of the Plishtim, 7 sheep as part of the peace treaty, bili ritzoni, without my consent, without my ratzon, without my will, so this is Hashem speaking, kineged kain, aroni chozer baste plishtim zayin chodoshim. As a punishment, my Aron will stay in the field of the Plishtim for 7 months. And that's not viewed as a punishment to God. God doesn't need the Aron. God doesn't need anything of that nature. But the fact that the Jews had their symbol of, their holiest item was kidnapped by the enemy, and it was in enemy control for 7 months, that was a public disgrace for the Jewish people. And so that there's a symbolism. You know, you have Avram dealing with the number 7 and the Plishtim. You have here, you have Klal Yisrael in general dealing with Plishtim, and the number 7 is there. There it was 7 sheep. Here it was 7 months. But the Medrash makes the connection, and again with the Plishtim. So this is where we're at. That it was some level of for 7 months, the Aaron was in control of the Plishtim. Pasuk Beis. Vayikru Plishtim. La Kohanim, v'la Kosmim, lemor. The Plishtim, the people, the masses of the people, gathered together. They called 2 groups of people for advice. Kohanim, their priests, so they're idol worshipping priests. They had Kohanim. Kohanim is a word for priest that goes, it's a word, I guess, that's Kodesh and Chol. Obviously, our Kohanim, we believe, are the true priests, and we call them Kohanim. But in a base Avodah Zarah, this is also a Kohen. La Kosmim, so the Metzius Tzion tells us it's magicians, sorcerers, people who do kishuf, people who do magic. And they called them saying as follows. Ma na'aseh la'aron ha'ashem. What should we do to the Aron of God? Hodi'unu bameh nishalchenu l'mkomo. Let us know, inform us, with what or in what way should we send it back? So first, it seems like there are 2 questions going on here. It seems like, number one, they're asking the question, is the proper approach to send the Aron back? Semicolon. If we choose, and if that's the right course of action, how would one go about sending it back? You want to be effective. What would be the proper way to send it back? And again, they're reaching out to these are their spiritual advisors. They're recognizing that what's happening with this Aron is not a normal course of action. It's related to spiritual matters. They have offended the God of the Jews, and they're being smitten because of it. And therefore, this is a religious issue. So they're not turning to their governors or turning to their kings. They're turning specifically to their priests and to their magicians, things that are outside the realm of the rational. In their minds. And they're asking 2 questions. They're saying, should we give it back? What should we do with it? And I guess included in that, maybe they should throw it into the Mediterranean Sea. Maybe if you get rid of it that way, maybe you should destroy it. Maybe you should smash it. Meaning, they're looking for advice, but they seem to be leaning towards, the best idea is probably to get rid of this. Just give this back to the Jews. Let's give it back to the Israelites. Let's get it out of our hands. But what would be the best way to go about doing that? So they're turning for advice. Pasuk Gimel. Vayomru, and they replied, meaning the priests and the magicians, or the sorcerers, replied, Im mishalchim, if it is sent, or if you send, es Aron Elokei Yisrael, the Aron, which they're calling the God of the Jews, al tishalchu oso rekam. Don't send it back empty. Don't send it back just alone, just returning the actual Aron. Ki hashev tashiv lo asham. You shall surely, or a double language to show emphasis, you shall surely return it with an asham. An asham, we have that phrase in our Torah. An asham is a guilt offering. There's a karban that's referred to as a karban asham, that when a person performs a certain avera and they're not, It's usually in the context of when you're not sure if you did the Avera. When a person does certain types of sins, what's called b'shogeg, there are different ways a person can sin. A person can sin by doing something b'mezid. B'mezid is on purpose. The person knows that this activity is prohibited on Shabbos, and in front of two witnesses after receiving a warning, the person says, I know this activity is prohibited on Shabbos, and I want to do the activity anyway. And the punishment for violating Shabbos, b'mezid on purpose, it's a capital case, it's a death penalty. If a person is unknown whether or not, let's say a person didn't know it was Shabbos when he or she did that activity. They lost track of time. They didn't know it was Shabbos. Or they knew it was Shabbos, but they didn't know that that said activity is something that's prohibited. That's called unintentionally violating. An unintentional violation of Shabbos falls under the category they have to bring a karban called a karban chatas, which is a sin offering. There are other situations when a person is not so sure whether or not they did a sin, they bring a karban asham. And asham usually gets translated as a guilt offering, and it's usually a reference to an animal in halacha, it's an animal sacrifice that's brought in the Beis HaMikdash. There are six different types of karban asham. Here it's being referred to as a guilt gift. Like, I did something wrong to you, and so I'm now going to give you a type of gift to try and smooth things over. A guilt offering in the sense of a monetary gift to appease you. So the advisors say, don't send it back empty. Ki hashev tashivu lo asham. Oz, if you do that, then terafu, you shall be healed. You'll have a refuah. V'nodalachem lama lo tasar yado michem. And you will know why his hand is capital H, why his hand, meaning the God of the Israelites' hand, was not removed from you. You'll know why he kept going at you. You'll know why you kept being punished. If you send it back and you give this guilt offering, parentheses, and the plagues stop, and everything goes back to normal, then you're going to know that everything is fine. What's interesting, and the way it just comes right out of the page, they never give the answer that you should send it back. They just say, if you send it back, you have to send it back this way. Which, I think we see something, and we'll see this in a number of psukim again, there's a reason why these individuals are kohanim to Avodah Zarah and magicians. And they haven't, these are individuals that aren't signing up for the next conversion course to become Israelites. They don't see the truth in God 100%. They're not ready to leave what they do. Because if they were, because if you focus on their second statement is saying, oh yeah, you should give it back and give it back with a guilt offering. And then if the things stop, you'll understand that it came from God. They're not full maminim. They don't fully believe in God, in the God of the Jews. Therefore, they don't say you definitely have to send it back. They're now saying, if you send it back, you have to send it back this way. And then you'll maybe see certain results. But they're not, if they were fervent in their belief, they would never say, imishalchem. They would have said, get this Aron out of here. Get this Aron out of here. You got to give it back. It belongs with the Israelites. But that's not their attitude.
But they're probably polytheists.
Correct.
They believe that our God has some power.
Correct.
Or maybe he isn't the top dog or whatever.
Right.
So they're saying, you know, if you send it back, maybe this God will be stronger or that God. It's not that they're not saying he's not a God.
Right.
Their God isn't a God. He's just not the strongest God. He's not the one God.
Right. So the question is, why aren't they more definitive to say you really should send it back? That's the question.
I guess they're not sure where he is on the
right. So and that we're gonna see that come out of play again, because the people seem to be ready to listen. The people are open. The people seem that they'll do whatever the advisors tell them to. They're being afflicted by an intense plague. People are dying. People are in pain. They'll do anything to stop it. So the people hear that, Pasuk Dalet, Vayomru, and the people, the masses or the representatives of the masses answer back, Ma Hasham Asher Nashivlo. So what is the guilt offering? What should we, you know, how many zeros should be on the check? You know, what is considered to be a guilt offering? Vayomru, and the priests and the magicians answered back, Mispar Sarnei Plishtim, according to the number of governors of the Plishtim, There were five, we've mentioned this before, there were five main Plishti cities of the time, five major centers, and each center had a governor, had an officer who was in charge of that population center. There was the three cities that were mentioned. There was Gas, Ekron, and Ashdod. And additionally, there was Ashkelon and the city of Gaza. So according to that number, according to the number of governors, Chamisha Techore Zahav, you should make five golden images of hemorrhoids, V'chamisha Achbere Zahav, and five golden mice. Ki Magefa Achas L'chulam U'sarnechem. There was one plague against you, the people, and the governors. And so the governors, you know, this, I don't know if this is the first source of what a representative government is all about, but that that your representatives actually the government officials represent the people. But here the pasuk is saying there was one plague against the masses and against the governors, and therefore by giving a tribute, which we'll discuss in a second, a guilt offering type of tribute, one for each governor, that's basically saying one for each population center, one for each of the main cities. The plague itself had to do with hemorrhoids and the role that the mice played, that perhaps there were mice involved in terms of plaguing the people. We don't need to get too graphic, but in the same location where hemorrhoids are, mice might have played a role. And the idea being is that, again, this is an idol worshiping society. This God, the God of the Jews, the way they would talk, was powerful enough to bring this plague. And by us giving gold in the shape of that plague that he was able to do, it kind of praises his creative ability. For us, there's no, well, since we believe in Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad, so Hashem can bring any plague. There's not necessarily an idea of making an image that would, well, first of all, we don't believe in making images. But the idea of having one, you know, to say that this will cause him praise for doing it in this way, that's not, you know, it's not something that speaks to us. It seemingly spoke to them. And to make it look at, it's almost like the greatest compliment. You're going to show, first of all, it's going to be gold. So clearly the asham, the guilt gift. So the fact that it's gold, that makes sense. To give gold makes sense. But to praise the creator of the plague by making the items in the shape to some degree. Obviously, I can't say I fully understand what the shape, to say it was the shape of mice, okay, we know what that looks like. But to say it was a golden hemorrhoid, maybe they made something that looked like flesh and a hemorrhoid on top of that. But it was some type, they seem to know what they're talking about. Again, we're not told if the people followed up with the question and said, oh, how do you go about doing that and how big, and, you know, did it have to be a kazayas, a tefach, I don't know. It doesn't seem to be, they knew what they were saying, and the people understood. Pasuk Hey, Vasisem tzalme tchorechem, v'tzalme achberechem. You'll make the images of these hemorrhoids and the mice, hamashchishem esa'aret, that were demolishing, that were destroying the land. Unesatem le'elokei Yisrael kavod. And you shall give them to the God of Israel as a kavod, as an honor, to show, like, look what you did. You were able to create such a plague, and here we are recognizing your power. Ulai yakelas yadome aleichem, and by doing so, by giving this gift, perhaps he, capital H, will alleviate his hand from upon you. Umeal Elohechem, and from on your gods. Umeal Artzachem, and on your lands. And here we're seeing how the Kohanim and the sorcerers were expressing that there were different aspects of society that were being affected by the Aaron being present, that there was that it was affecting the people, it was affecting the gods of the people, lowercase g, and then Artzachem, it was affecting the land. Maybe that's kind of abroad, that it was affecting everyone. It's interesting that if they were the Kohanim, they were the priests doing the talking, that they referred to it as Eloheichem. It should your gods, but they're and even saying Me'aleichem, Elokeichem, Eloheichem, Artzachem, they don't see themselves as being part of the people. That thought kind of just hit me as I'm reading it to you right now. I didn't see anyone talk about that. Why, you know, they don't, you know, I'm not going to try to say that you know, Jewish leaders are better than these individuals automatically, but they definitely see that their people are going through a distressful time, and they don't seem to be empathetic necessarily. They're saying, oh, their God will alleviate the hand from you, your God, and your land. I mean, these were Plishtim, they were Plishtim too.
Well, at this time, they all thought that gods were local. Every god was strong in his local area and not somewhere else.
Right.
So these guys didn't really believe that this was that the Jewish god could have effect in their
outside of his domain.
So
right.
They probably figured that their people were not doing right with God for this to happen, but they weren't really convinced that they didn't really believe that the Jewish God could have power in their locale.
Right.
So that's why they're so skeptical about everything.
Right, yeah, so we're going to see their skepticism in an even greater way in just a couple of psukim.
Maybe the priests and these people were not afflicted with any of these diseases, so that's right. Sort of why they were not included. Although there are too many terms here that they should have been, like my land and things, but
right.
They didn't get these afflictions at all.
Right. They don't seem to feel the
pain.
They don't seem right. to feel if they're not being affected, but your countrymen
yeah,
are clearly affected.
Right.
Again, I don't think the pasuk is trying to be critical of them in that way, mm-hmm. But it's just something of note. Pasuk vav. These priests and the sorcerers, they're continuing in their argument to convince the people that when you're sending it back, send it back with a gift. Why should you harden your hearts? Why should you make your hearts heavy? Like the Egyptians made their hearts heavy and made their hearts hard, and Paro, the Egyptians and Paro made their hearts heavy and their hearts hard, that they were stubborn, that the Egyptians didn't allow one plague to hit them and send the Jews away. The Mitzrayim, the Egyptians, in the time that the Jews were slaves, in the time of Moshe, way back when. This is, you know, here you're talking, it's like, I'm trying to roughly do the math, you know, 500 years before, approximately, that the Jews were slaves in Egypt and the plagues were happening there. Why harden your hearts like the Egyptians did? Halo kasher hisalel bahem vayishalchum vayelichu. Did it not happen that when God mocked them? The pasuk says, "Asher hisalalti b'Mitzrayim," that God mocked the Egyptians by bringing plague after plague. He turned the Egyptians into a laughingstock, and then they had to send the Israelites anyway, and they went on their way. Meaning, why are you? So, in this pasuk, it's almost like they're hinting at the idea that you should definitely send, like, and the reference the reference to the Egyptians is like. Is the Egyptians sent away the Jews, and you're thinking to yourself, think about all the horrible plagues and death and pain, and even you know what we have in what happened at Kriyas Yamsuf. Had Makas Dam, had the plague of blood come, and the Egyptians let the people go, so you know maybe our Seder table would be a little less interesting because we'd have less to talk about, but the Jews would have been out, and the Egyptians would have been saved. And so they would have been saved pain, saved death. And so here they're telling them the idea that why hold back? Why harden your heart? Why be stubborn? Pasuk Zion. So now at this point, especially when you hear them say, why be stubborn? I'm not telling us that we should have our children grow up to be like the Kohanim and the magicians of the Plishtim, but it sounds like they have the right idea. Like, send it back. give an asham, give a guilt offering, you'll see that you're healed. And now they present the plan of the exact form of delivery, and the overall theme of the next three psukim is a capital test, capital T, a test to see if it's really God that was causing this. Like everything else that happened until now, they're not quite convinced. They're not quite convinced with the Aaron being in the house of the temple of the Avodah Zarah Dagon, and the idol falling down once, and then the idol falling down a second time and basically being smashed, right in, and falling down right in front of the Aaron. That's not convincing. The Aaron affecting the first city it's in, the second city it's in, and the third city it's in, and those cities only be being affected when the Aaron gets there, that's not convincing. They need to come up with a multi-level test to see if it's true. Pasuk Zion. V'ata, and now. Kichu v'asu agalah chadasha achas. Take and make, or make and take for yourself, a new wagon, one new wagon. Ushte faros alos. And two nursing cows. Asher lo Allah alehem ol, that have never had a yoke placed upon them. Va'asartem es haparos ba'agala, and you will tie, bind the cows to the wagon. Va'ashivosem b'nehem me'achareyem ha'baisa, and you'll return the calves of these cows, the children of the cows, behind them going towards the home, meaning going towards wherever the cows call home. The opposite direction. Pasaches. Ulakachtem es Aron Hashem. You'll take the Ark of God. Unesatem oso al hagala, and you will place it on the wagon. Ves klei hazahav, and the vessels of gold, asher hashivosem lo asham, that you're returning as a guilt offering. Tasimu ba'argaz mitzido, you will place it in a chest. On its side, meaning this wagon will have the Aron, and on the side of the Aron there'll be a chest where that'll have the golden items. V'shilach demoso v'halach, you'll send them and it'll go. Pasuk tes. Ure'isem, and you will see. Im derech givulo ya'ale beit shemesh, if it ascends and goes on the road to the boundary, towards Beit Shemesh, Hu asalanu etara gdola hazos. It was He, capital H, God, who did this evil to us. The imlo, but if not, if the wagon doesn't go straight to Beit Shemesh, then v'yadanu kilo yado nagabanu. We will know that it was not His hand that touched us. Mikra hu hayalanu, it was a coincidence. It was just a coincidence. They come up with an extremely, extremely elaborate test. Now, some aspects seem to be nice in this, at least the beginning. The fact that they want to have a new wagon, you know, it's almost like, that's almost like an honorable thing. It should be nice and clean for the Aaron to go back. But it would appear more than that, an idea of trying to test God. If you take a look at the second source on the sheet, it's just Rashi. Not just Rashi. It's Rashi. HaKadosh. The Heilige Rashi. I remember when I graduated 8th grade, so we had different elementary schools came to the same high school. So the kids who came from, you know, a slightly less Ivrit B'Ivrit, they didn't really understood the words, but they weren't familiar when the boys said Amar Rashi HaKadosh, and then the boys that came from Ivrit B'Ivrit didn't really understand when the boys said Zuck the Heilige Rashi. Both kids were trained by their elementary school rebbeim to give Rashi a title, but in different ways. But either way, everyone was in agreement that Rashi was holy. So, seeing Rashi together, Asher Lo Ala Aleim Ol Kol Ze L'Nisayon, this is all a test. A challenge. She'ein elu ru'uyos limshoch. These calves were not really fit to pull a wagon. Va'od shigu'ot achar b'nehem. they were caring for their and drawn towards their children. The im ye koach ba'aron she'elicho some aleihem nodashu asalanu. If it would go against all of this, if it would go against all this, and it's really remarkable if you sit there and come up with a list. So the fact that it's a new cart, so we're not the cart. You know, there could be the wheels might not be oiled. The cart that's not been tested. You know, will the wheels be able to handle the ups and the bumps of a road? Cows are not usually riding animals. Cows don't pull wagons. Cows, specifically female cows, are animals that people raise for milk, for meat, for not together. The cows are nursing. They're nursing mothers. They're concerned for their children. They've never had a yoke put upon them. They've never pulled anything in their life. So why would these, again, animals are, maybe even more than people, creatures of habit. Creatures of habit, they'll do what you train them to do. These are untrained. It's like, I've never had a real pet besides fish. So anyone who's had a dog, when you're trying to train them, time number one, it's probably not going to work. Definitely doesn't work with children, time number one, that's for sure. Not to draw a comparison. And then the pasuk is specifically they're going to take the children of the calves and send them home, send them in the exact opposite direction. Then the pasuk also mentions that it is a ya'aleh Beit Shemesh. It's an approach, apparently, from where they were, wherever this field of the Plishtim was, it was an up road, animals on their own, especially if they're pulling a weight, they're not going to choose to go up road when there are probably other ways to go. And, you know, the other idea is that you need something that almost sounds so elementary, is you need both cows to do this. This is not just a test of one animal, it's a test of two animals at the same time. And they both have to be on track. If they've never had a yoke, they've obviously never worked. You know, these two motherly cows have never worked at all, let alone worked together. So it would appear that the sorcerers and the priests, they are extremely still skeptical about the power of the Jewish God, and they're basically saying it's the final test. It's the final test to see if it's true. Pasuk Yud. Vayasu hanashim kein. The people went ahead and did so. Vayichu shtei faros alos. They took two nursing cows. Vayasrum ba'agala. And they tied them. They binded them to the wagon. Vyas b'nehem kalu ba'bayis. And the children, meaning the calves, they kalu ba'bayis. It means that they completed them at home. The word kalu is a strange word to be used here. It's almost like they tied them up. They tied the kids up at home, but that wasn't the key. The key point was that they were gonna have the calves leave the scene in front of the mother. But that's what the pasuk means, is that they had some type of procession, and then they made sure that the calves would be wherever home base was. Pasuk Yud Aleph. Vayasimu es Aron Hashem el Hagala. They placed the Aron of God into the wagon. Vyas ha'argaz and the chest. Vyas achbere hazahav. Vyas salmei tchorehem. The golden mice and the images of the hemorrhoids. They placed that into the chest, and that's on the wagon. Pasuk Yud Beis. Vayisharna haparos baderech. Vayisharna haparos baderech. One of the ways, and we'll discuss some others, the word, this is perhaps the word yashar. That the cows went yashar, went straight baderech on the way. Al derech Beit Shemesh, on the road that led to Beit Shemesh, b'mesila achas, in one path, b'mesila achas holchu haloch v'go, they were going and they were even groaning. V'lo saru yaminu small, they didn't swerve to the right or to the left. It was a direct road. You know, again, whether or not there were actual, you know, turns in the road, curves, it means it was a direct path. I like, you know, my parents live in Queens, so now that you use the hutch to get from Queens to here, it's basically like, for my parents, it's like one right turn on, and then you go till New Rochelle. It's like the Van Wyck connects the White. So it's just the same. You don't really turn. So obviously you're making little curves here and there. The direction is not completely straight, but it's like one straight route. These animals went on one straight route. Velo saru yaminu small. They didn't swerve to the right or to the left, which is a phrase that's found elsewhere in the Tanakh. Not to swerve to the right or to the left means to stay focused on the mission. The Pasuk says in terms of, you know, we're coming up to the holiday of Hanukkah. So it's a very famous question asked in the Gemara. How in the world can we stand there in front of our menorah on the first night of Hanukkah and all the nights of Hanukkah? How could we say the bracha, Asher Kedishanu b'mitzvosa v'tzivanu? The second bracha of Sha'asa Nisim, that you performed miracles for our forefathers. That sounds beautiful. Shechianu, great. We haven't been, you know, it hasn't been Hanukkah in a year. We're all here. We're healthy. We're alive. That's nice. But to say the words that you sanctified us and commanded us to light the Hanukkah candles, you open Bereishis to Vezos HaBracha. In the Torah, you cannot find a commandment to light Hanukkah candles. There's no commandment in the Torah to light Hanukkah candles. So how, you know, to put up a mezuzah, you can say, Asher Kedishanu b'mitzvos HaZivanu. It says so in the Torah. It says you have to put it al mezuzah, on the mezuzah. So how can we say the bracha, how could we say the bracha of Asher Kedishanu? So you can say it. You're supposed to say it. You have to say it. The Gemara teaches there are two psukim in the Torah that give authority to the rabbis, to the Rabbanon, to go ahead and create. They created Hanukkah as an invented holiday. It only happened in the time of the second Beis HaMikdash. Mordechai and Esther, the most righteous Jews, never lit a Hanukkah menorah. Right? Moshe Rabbeinu never lit a Hanukkah menorah. How? It wasn't created yet. So the Pasuk says, you need to listen to the sages, and lo tasur yamin usmol. Don't swerve to the right or to the left. That when there's a directive, when there's a law that comes from Chazal, you're not allowed to go yamin usmol. So yamin usmol means not to deviate. Below yitzaru yamin usmol, the cows here did not deviate. They stayed focused. And how is that known? V'sarnei plishtim hochim achareim. The governors themselves went afterward, ad gavul Beit Shemesh, until the boundary of Beit Shemesh. They went to visually witness and then attest. And then, I imagine, go back and spread the words throughout their land. Now, the fact that the cows were groaning, so it says, holchu haloch v'ga'o, that they were, here the article translates it as lowing. That means they were making their cow noises. So it might, you can take that a number of ways. You could take it as they were making noises because they longed for their children, and that every step of the journey, it was not natural for the cow to actually be going away from the nursing cow, to go away from the calf. But every step of the journey, this was not natural. This was being guided by Hashem, and therefore it wasn't natural. And the fact that they're making their noise kind of attests to that. And you know, you have the plishtim standing there listening, and the plishtim are saying, it makes no sense. These cows are groaning like they want to go back to their children, and yet they keep going straight. They keep going straight on the path. The Gemara in Avodah Zarah has a comment that if you look at the word in the pasuk, that first word in pasuk Yud Beis, va'yisharna. So many of us are understanding it from the language of, and that's the way the Metzidus Tzion says, that it's yeshara, the word yashar. You're going to get in the cab in Israel, yashar, yashar, adasof. You know, go straight. So there's a play on the word that it actually is shira, song. That if the shin and the resh, that it's shira, a song. And that they were singing a song of praise to Hashem. That even the animal kingdom on their own level, can sing out a praise to God. And here, you know, you have these two, again, cows. The cows don't have the same feelings that we have. They don't have the same thought processes that we have. Animals in general do not, contrary to what Disney has taught, at least my generation. Animals don't have that. But animals, in a way, these animals, they went from being insignificant, relatively insignificant cows amongst a herd of cows, to now being the vehicle with the wagon, an actual vehicle of, but the representation of Kvod Shemayim, of honoring Hashem, of make, you know, these cows are making a Kiddush Hashem that screams out for all time, as recorded here in the Pasuk, of that yes, all the plagues that happened against the Plishtim was from Hashem, and that the Aron belongs with the Jewish people, and this is, you know, so there's an aspect of these cows singing out Shira, singing out praise, obviously on their level, but that the entire nature recognizes the hand of God and the beauty of God's role in running the world. So the Aron is on its way back, and it's going towards Beit Shemesh. Pasuk Yud Gimel. U'Beit Shemesh kotzrim k'tzir chitim ba'emek. And the inhabitants of Beit Shemesh, the people of Beit Shemesh, they were in the middle of reaping the wheat harvest in the valley. Vayisu esenayim, they lifted up their eyes. Vayir es ha'aron, and they saw the ark. Vayismechu liros, and they were happy to see it. They had no idea that the Aron was on its way back. As we mentioned, it has now been 7 months since the Aron was taken. As far as we know, there were no more battles with the Plishtim. And so there was kind of relative quiet. But that relative quiet was perhaps a mournful time for the Jewish people, because they knew they were without the Aron.
Beit Shemesh, Israelite territory now?
Beit Shemesh is Israelite territory.
So these carts with these followers of Plishtim are just entering Israelite.
Well, it says they kind of, it's Pasuk says they went ad gvul Beit Shemesh.
Okay.
Pasuk says they went to the border. So it would appear that at some point they're watching from afar, and in a couple of psukim we're actually told that they go on their way.
Sounds miraculous.
Well, the whole thing's kind of. Going to have to play the miracle card for the whole parak, and last parak, and perhaps the parak before that. Welcome to the prophets. So they're happy, which would seem to be a good thing. Pasuk Yadalid, the Hagala, this wagon, ba el sde Yehoshua beis Hashemshi batamud sham. The wagon with the cows came and entered the field of a man named Yehoshua, who was from Beit Shemesh. Vatamut Sham, it stopped there. This individual, Yehoshua, I didn't see anything about him, whether about his, you know, his significance, past, future, otherwise. Visham, and there on his property, Evan Gedola, there was a large rock. It was a physically large stone. And what they did was the Vayivaku es Atzei Hagala, at some point, and again the order of the psukim might be just slightly out of each other, because the next pasuk is going to talk about the Levium unloading the Aron. And here they're already talking about chopping up the boards of the wagon, so it could be slightly out of order. But Vayivaku esatzei agala, they chopped up the wood of the wagon, the esaparos, and they took the cows that pulled the wagon, helu ola la'ashem, and they brought a sacrifice to God. Most authorities are of the opinion that these were the Israelites bringing a proper karban to Hashem. There's a minority view that this was actually the the somehow the plishtim got involved. These the officers of the plishtim were the ones bringing the carbon, but that doesn't seem to be the flow of the psukim. Now, bringing a carbon, so that, on the one hand, that raises a red flag. How could they bring a carbon? They're outside the Mishkan. So we had discussed already, there was the troubling fact that the Mishkan had been destroyed. At least the location of Shiloh had been destroyed. The Mishkan was evacuated and was set up in another city, which we'll hear about. And the Aron was obviously taken by the Plishtim. Once the Mishkan was no longer functioning in Shiloh, there was a temporary allowance to build a private Mizbeach. That anywhere a person wanted in the country, they could build a private Mizbeach. From this time, basically the last 7 months, since the Mishkan in Shiloh was no longer functioning, until Shlomo HaMelech built the Beis HaMikdash. So this is, I don't know, you want to say it's approximately, let's just call it 70 years, approximately, from now until Shlomo builds the Beis HaMikdash, where there was an allowance to bring a private Mizbeach wherever you wanted. And once Shlomo builds the Beis HaMikdash, then private Mizbeachos are not allowed. On a regular Mizbeach, a para, a female cow, is not offered as a carbon ola. There are rules and regulations. You read, not always the most, it can be on any level, intriguing reading, but when you read, right, after you finish the narratives of, say, Bereishis and Shmos, and you come to Vayikra, there's a little bit of a challenge, but the Torah has infinite wisdom, every single pasuk. Leviticus, which is the study of laws of the Levites, the Torah Sakohanim, there's rules and regulations for karbanos. The same we have rules and regulations, how do you keep Shabbos, and how do you keep all the mitzvahs, how do you bring karbanos? So there are certain animals, there are certain species of animals that are available for certain karbanos, there are certain genders that are available for certain karbanos, and certain ages that are available for certain karbanos. If the animal is too old, you can't bring it. If it's too young, you can't bring it. And you sit there and learn the psukim, and you understand. So a carbon, if you go home and test me, you're invited to, a carbon ola cannot be brought from a female cow, and here it was. So the Mefarshim explain that the rules and regulations for karbanos, that's for the set mizbeach that was in the Mishkan, that was in the Beis HaMikdash, but there was a little bit more of a, I guess, creative license to bring karbanos in a different way when the karbon was being brought in someone's backyard, like here it was in Beit Shemesh. And there was kind of great significance to take these cows and offer them up, excuse me, as a sacrifice to God, because these cows were used for the honor of Hashem. And again, Judaism believes in karbanos. It's not, you know, we don't have to be apologetic about that. And that the role of these cows were seen as being elevated by being brought as an elevation offering, a karban ola to God. Pasuk Tesvav. Va'alevim horidu es aron Hashem. The Levim took the aron of God down from the wagon. Ve'ata argaz asher ito asher bo klei zav, and the chest that had in it, that was with it, and that had the golden vessels, vayisimu el ha'evan hagdola, and they put it on top of this large rock. Va'anshei Beis Shemesh, and the inhabitants of Beis Shemesh, halu olot, they brought more karbanos ola, vayizbechu zvachim, and they sacrificed other sacrifices, which usually refer to a karban shlamim, where part is on the mizbeach and part is given to a kohen and part is eaten by the owner. Bayomahu, on that day, la Hashem to Hashem, pasuk tazayin. V'chamisha sarnei plishtim ra'u, the five officers of the plishtim saw this, and we take the pasuk from before, meaning they were watching this from afar. Vayashuvu ekron bayomahu, they returned to Ekron on that day. They go back. Perhaps it's to tell and inform the people of the Plishtim. You know, it really worked out. The Aron went all the way back. The Jews have it. And, you know, hopefully for their sake, the plagues against the Plishti people are finished. The Pasigit Zion. The Eila Tchori Hazav Asher Hishivu Plishtim Asham Lashem. And these are the golden hemorrhoids that were returned by the Plishtim as a guilt offering to Hashem. La Ashdod echad, la Aza echad, la Ashkelon echad, Legat Echad Le'ekron Echad. So here you have the five Plishti cities, Ashdod, Aza, Ashkelon, Gas, and Ekron. Why the cities are put in this order, I did not necessarily see a reason. I think it's usually assumed that Gas was actually the largest city. This is not in the order of the plague. The plague hit Ashdod, Gas, then Ekron. So this has Ashdod, Aza, so I don't know. I guess, maybe biblical archaeologists would say that there's some type of order. Maybe it goes in size, maybe it goes in stature. I don't know if those are questions, or maybe there's nothing. Not alphabetical either. So I don't know. So there was five for the five. Why it mentions the name here and not before? We kind of saw five for five the whole way through. Why it's mentioned here, we're not necessarily sure.
Why does it have a resh, two reshes, and the rest salachs in between in the Hebrew? Is that in your book?
In the copy.
In other words, they have the samach.
In the copy, there's these like
samach before each and a resh.
I'm not sure.
So, is that in your edition too?
No.
No. Okay.
I'm missing out.
Oh, okay. So
I don't know.
Reference some, because it's in other places too. It is. It must be some kind of an interpretation here. There's one at Yudalid. It's another spot. It's not just there.
Right. So usually the samach represents a paragraph break, where if you were looking at an actual scroll of written on parchment, there'd be a paragraph break. So why there would be so many paragraph break within one verse? That's a good question. We'll have to do some further research. Unfortunately, this experience of the city of Beit Shemesh receiving the Aron did not end well for the people of Beit Shemesh, and we need to discuss that, and it's unfortunate in the last couple of minutes of a class to end on a downer, but it's just the way it is. You'll come back. Hopefully, it'll be better. Pasuk Yuches, the Achbere Hazav Misbar Kol Ori Plishtim Lachamesha Sasarnim Meir Mitzar VeAd Kofer HaPerazi. The five. Golden mice. So that was corresponding to all of the cities of the Plishtim, to the five governors who all ruled from the fortified city until the open villages. I mean, kind of like this is like an expansive phrase. Va'ad Evel Hagdola Asher Hinichu Aleh Asaron Hashem, until the stone of mourning of Avelos, which is going to be the fact why that name is going to be given for what's about to happen. This is a name that is based on the future event. Asher Hinichol, where they put the Aron of God, Adi Omazeh, until today, B'stei Yoshua Beit Shemshi, in the field of Yoshua, who is from Beit Shemesh. Some commentators see in the phrase that the fact that it mentions Meir Miftzar Ad Kofer HaPerazi, that the main gifts were these five, the five golden hemorrhoids, the five golden mice, but there were other minor gifts that kind of the smaller towns that were also affected, or thought that they were affected, by the Aron being present, that they also sent gifts. Pasuk Yotes, Vayach ba'anshe Beit Shemesh, and he struck, he, capital H, reference to God, struck the people of Beit Shemesh. Ki ra'u ba'aron Hashem, because they looked into the Aron of God. Vayach ba'am shivim ish, and it was struck from the people 70 men, chamishim elef ish, 50,000 men. Vayis'ablu ha'am, and the people mourned, ki hika Hashem ba'am maka gedola, for God had struck a great blow to the Jewish people. Now this, The phrasing of the pasuk is strange, because it doesn't say shivim ish v'chamishim elef ish. It doesn't use the conjunction and. It kind of gives you two random phrases. One is shivim ish, one is chamishim elef ish. 70 men and 50,000. So Rashi quotes from the Gemara in Sota, that it was two ways to understand it. Both are extremely tragic. I would say for people like ourselves who unfortunately are used to large number of casualties, the smaller the number, the easier it is for us to swallow. So the Gemara gives two options, that either it was 70 men, but each of them were high quality men. Each of them were high quality individuals, that it was each of them was like 500,000 people, however you are to understand that. Or that it was each of them were like 50,000 people. Or it was 50,000 people, and each person was like the 70 members of the Sanhedrin. That it was a lot of people, and also full of quality. Either way you slice it, there was a great blow. There was a great blow of loss of life, that even if you take the approach that it was 70, and maybe that's, you know, the easier one to explain, Vayach ba'am shivim ish, that it was 70, Chamishim elefish, who it was like there was a loss of life of 50, that they, you know, it happens to be the Mishnah tells us in Masecha Sanhedrin that if someone saves a life, it's as if they saved the entire world. So if you save, if you take a life, it's like you're taking, you know, who knows how many children, grandchildren, great-great-children, great-great-great-grandchildren will be produced from that loss of life. So why did it happen? So the commentators give a number of explanations. The pasuk gives one. The pasuk says ki ra'u ba'aron. They looked into the aron. And there's a pasuk that says in Sefer Bamidbar towards the beginning in Perek Dalet, basically that if you look into the parts of the Holy of Holies where you're not supposed to be looking, you're met with death. That it's meant to be treated with such reverence. The Radak says that what was the matter with them is that it says they came, the Aron came while they were working and they were joyful, but the Radak thinks that they looked up and saw the Aron, smiled, and then kept on working. That they didn't stop their working. The Gemara in Sota also mentions how some of them turned to the Aron. Again, it's a little hard to understand this, but they turned to the Aron and spoke to the Aron and basically said, you know, how dare you? You let yourself be captured, and now you just prance back, and now you just come back whenever you want. Or the fact that they looked inside the Aron, they gazed at what was inside. What seems to be, and it's not hard to understand. We had talked about, and Bazak talks about this here, because he spoke about it in Perek Dalet, that the reason why they lost the Aron had to do with kind of putting too much emphasis on the Aron. Here, there seems some degree of not treating the Aron with enough respect. It's almost like they went to the opposite extreme, that they're being too light, a little too much kalos rosh, too much levity around the Aron. There's too much joy, too much celebration, looking into the Aron, not treating it with proper respect. And in the end, what you would come to is that when you learn both prakim, is that the you have to find a you know, the Rambam's golden path, the Shvil Hazav. You have to find the right medium of how to relate to the Aron, not with too much faith in the Aron doing what needs to be done. It has to be under the guide of looking, of having the faith in Hashem, but at the same time treating it with the proper respect. And the people of Beit Shemesh seemingly didn't. So we'll actually stop here, because the next two psukim can really be read with the beginning of Perek Zayin, which basically has the people of Beit Shemesh saying, you know, almost like the Plishtim said, we're not the ones to be held. We shouldn't be the ones housing the Aron. Let's put out the let's see if there could be some righteous Jews out there who could take the Aron and Kachava. They were successful in getting another community to take the Aron, and the Aron found its proper place and actually remained in that proper place. I believe we'll double check, but I believe until the day that David HaMelech took the Aron and brought it to Yerushalayim, it stayed in the second place after Beit Shemesh. So Be'ez Hashem, next time we will continue. Okay. Thank you.